that sexy. Alright, woman, you're good. How you doing, you know me? Original joke, buddy. You want me fine, mother? Woman, you're good. How you doing, you know me? Original joke, buddy. You want me fine, mother? Woman, physically fit. Physically fit. Physically, physically, physically. Woman, physically fit. Physically fit. Physically, physically, physically. Woman, you're nice, sweet, fantastic. Reaching for the ocean as a big Titanic. Woman, you're nice, sweet, fine, energetic. Reaching for the ocean as a big Titanic. Woman, you're nice, sweet, fantastic. Reaching for the ocean as a big Titanic. Woman, you're nice, sweet, fine, energetic. Reaching for the ocean as a big Titanic. Come on!
It's just about 9 o'clock at 88.9 FM, KUCI in Irvine, where for this next hour, the opinions and views expressed are not necessarily those of KUCI, UC Irvine, or University of California, Board of Regents. Time now for Talking Animals, KUCI.
Will deny, and your pack of animal.
That's music from Kid Creole and the Coconuts with a song called Animal Crackers as we slide into today's edition of Talking Animals on 88.9 FM KUCI in Irvine and streaming live, of course, on the internet at KUCI.org. And the whole enterprise, the whole shebang, the whole enchilada is broadcasting from the University of California at Irvine. I'm Duncan Strauss, and I'll be with you till 10 o'clock this morning with our program that is devoted to all subjects in the animal kingdom. Right off the bat, I'd like to tell you that for the next hour, you can reach us directly by phone at 949-824-5824, 949-UCI, KUCI. And I absolutely urge you to use that number and call us at any point in the show. Don't be shy. I'm telling you, we love to get calls. And as Serena mentioned earlier, our guest today is a really cool veterinarian, Dr. Mary Sebsta, who we'll do a little chatting, of course, but she'll be happy to take your calls about any sort of pet or animal question or help or seasonal issue or whatever. So that's coming up later. We'll get into a bit more about that momentarily. But other ways to be in touch with us, of course, include emailing us at talkinganimals@AOL.com and checking out our website at talkinganimals.net. Again, yes, that's right, folks. It's .net. It's .net. It's talkinganimals.net. Okay. Also, before we move on, I want to thank Serena Sharp, the aforementioned Serena Sharp, for another rip-snorting rendition of the Serena Sharp Show. Meanwhile, here at Talking Animals, primarily we strive to learn about animals and animal issues from our guests, from news items, from your calls, from assorted other sources. But we're also here each week to celebrate animals through music, comedy, and other means. We aim for a reasonable balance of those elements, and as you can sort of readily glean by visiting our nifty website at www.talkinganimals.net, where nearly every show we've broadcast ever since going on the air just about a year ago today. I mean, somewhere between last Monday and this Monday would be our year anniversary. So I'm trying not to make too big of a deal of that, but that was kind of cool. But more to the point, just about every show during that period is archived. We're a little behind, and we're going to get caught up shortly. But beyond that, clearly the heart of the program, as you can see from checking out those shows or listening in past weeks, is the interview that we conduct each week with some notable inhabitant of some province of the animal world. Today, our guest was going to be Tanya Petrovna, the chef, executive officer of Native Foods California Vegan Restaurants, which opened a Costa Mesa location several months ago. And she was going to talk to us about veggie cooking, her background, her cooking classes and seminars, the Native Foods operation, all kinds of other topics, all while preparing some dishes here in the KUCI studios. But anyways, unfortunately, due to illness in her family, she had to postpone her visit to Talk Animals, and we're going to reschedule as soon as possible. We do want to wish her mom a speedy recovery in the meantime. And the good news is that today we're going to be joined today by Dr. Mary Sebsta, a local veterinarian who's been on the show before. Really excellent vet, and been a great guest in the past, and I was so happy she could jump right in today when we needed to fill Tanya's slot. So she's going to address all kinds of issues for pets to keep in mind during the summer months. And again, as I mentioned earlier, she'd be happy to take your calls on any pet or animal question that you might have. Again, it's 949-824-5824, 949-UCI, KUCI. So you might be starting to think about your question now. She'll be joining us in a few minutes here on Talking Animals. So meanwhile, it's time for our weekly look at items of interest in animal news. And I want to remind you of the phone number to join us on the show with your own comments and questions about animals. Not only this week's animal news items, but also any other animal topic you care to discuss, announcements, maybe there's an event or benefit you have coming up that we should be aware of that's animal related, any observations you might have, and any stories you might have spotted in the news or elsewhere that we should be aware of. All of that would be most welcome at 949-824-5824, 949-UCI, KUCI. So, oh, what the heck? We got somebody calling now. Who knows? Maybe they're not calling for this, but we shall see. Hi, you're on live on Talking Animals on KUCI. Hi, you're on live on Talking Animals on KUCI. I get. All right, well, there you go. Anyway, so turning now to interesting or important developments recently in animal news. Typically, these are local, regional, national, sometimes international animal stories of note. And with any luck, we'll get your comments on these, some of these at least, and discuss them. And we also try to include a few announcements of upcoming events or activities you may want to pencil in on your calendar. So, all right then. Wait for it. Yes, let's talk turkey, as it were. Of course, this is produced by the Talking Animals, award-winning Rip and Read News Department. Starting off with something, while many people seem to still be discussing, the loss of Ronald Reagan, under whose administration ketchup was declared a vegetable, comes now this piece of news. Took this from the Associated Press the last few days. Batter-coated French fries are a fresh vegetable, according to the Agriculture Department, which has a federal judge's ruling to back it up. But the department said Tuesday that the classification applies only to rules of commerce, not nutrition, and it doesn't consider an order of fries the same as an apple in school lunches. No comment so far. The ruling last week by federal district judge Richard Schell in Beaumont, Texas, allowed batter-coated French fries to be considered fresh vegetables under the Perishable Agricultural Commodities Act. Most of the frozen fries have been on the list since 1996. Regulations under the law help to assure buyers of commodities such as French fries are getting what they ordered, said George Chartier, a spokesman for the Department's Agricultural Marketing Service. Frozen fries are fresh simply because they don't meet the standard necessary for them to be listed as processed, and adding batter to the fries does not change the classification, he said. The Commodities Act does not apply to nutrition, where batter-coated French fries are still considered processed food. Well, how about that? Thoughts? Comments? 949-824-5824-949-UCI-KUCI. And here's something to chew on of a different sort. Saw this in yesterday's New York Times Ethicist. That's the column in the Times Magazine, where people write in with some sort of ethical quandary, and the ethicist weighs in on it. So I'm just going to read it to you. And again, do a little pondering, call in. Do no pondering and call in. 949-824-5824-949-UCI-KUCI. All right, so here's the question. This reader writes in, on my list of things I've always wanted to do before I die is to swim with dolphins. But I'm a devout vegetarian and concerned about animal rights and conservation. Would it be wrong for me to swim with dolphins if they were bred in captivity? Would I be a hypocrite and be giving my money to perpetuate something I am against? That's the question. Here's the ethicist answer. I sympathize. It's been my lifelong dream to swim with Miss Meg Ryan, but I've come to realize that she, or any of our beloved actors, ought not to be conscripted in such ways for my pleasure. The Humane Society of the United States, like other organizations concerned about animals, takes a similar stance on dolphins. It asserts that swim with dolphin programs pose an immediate threat to the safety of both human and dolphin participants. And while the Humane Society regards the capture of wild dolphins to entertain humans as a greater sin than exploiting dolphins raised in captivity, the organization condemns both practices, noting that these marine mammals suffer and sometimes die in such programs. You wouldn't need to be a vegetarian to embrace this argument. There are times when we may indeed must exploit animals, for example, for food, parentheses, although vegetarians will argue this point, and again, would have been particularly fun if Tanya was here today, but anyway, or essential medical research, but vacation fund is not such a case. I mean, there's, you know, two or three things that are haggling points just right there in that one sentence, I think. Anyway, some say that a dolphin swim offers autistic children therapeutic benefits unobtainable elsewhere. Were that so, the good done to children might outweigh the harm done to dolphins. But neither claim of benefit or uniqueness is persuasive. Indeed, dolphin encounters have been promoted for a flamboyantly broad assortment of maladies. Manic depression, Rett syndrome, Tourette's syndrome, ADHD, Down syndrome, etc., according to one entrepreneur. This is not alternative medicine, it's hucksterism, which completes the ethicist's reply. So your own thoughts or comments on that, any element of that, both the question and in some ways the answer, may be food for thought, if you will. All right, turning to a much more local issue, but I wanted to announce this. We do periodically, but since this is coming right up, wanted to be sure to get this in on today's Animal News. Last summer, you may recall, one of our guests was Tanya Lee Thompson. Really great vet tech based in the Saddleback area. But more to the point, why she joins us is she teaches pet first aid and CPR classes through the auspices of the Red Cross. So we heard all about the classes and some of the important things that people learn in there. And it was pretty interesting. I mean, so it's everything from, you know, if your pet develops a breathing problem, gets bit by something, God forbid, gets a hold of some poison or something. On and on, there's a cool book that comes with it. It's just a one-day class, Sundays from 1 to 5, and the one coming up next is in Huntington Beach. It's this Sunday, June 27th, and it's in Huntington Beach off of Ellis. So to find out more information or to enroll, you can call Tawny Lee herself or Trina, either one, at 949-586-4250. It's 949-586-4250. Ask for Tawny Lee or Trina about the pet first aid CPR classes coming up this Sunday, June 27th. And lastly, before we go to our little quiz, mid-animal news quiz question, going to read at least a little bit of this. Headline, zoos rethink ways to contain gorillas. It starts, a cheetah could do it. So could a chimpanzee. But no one expected a stocky, knuckle-dragging, 340-pound gorilla to leap across a 12-foot-wide moat and a wall that separated him from visitors at the Dallas Zoo. But zoo investigators say that is exactly what happened the day that 13-year-old gorilla Jabari escaped and went on a 40-minute rampage in March, snatching up a toddler with his teeth and injuring three other people before being shot to death by officers. The gorilla's flying leap has astounded primate experts and is leading some to rethink the design of the gorilla exhibits at zoos across the country. Quote, you think, this may be one championship gorilla here, but I've got to be careful because maybe I've got one too, said Terry L. Maple, who is director of Zoo Atlanta for 17 years and has written about gorilla behavior. At the Dallas Zoo, animals in the gorilla enclosure are roughly at visitors' eye level. Zoo officials who conducted a three-month investigation announced this week that they believe Jabari had taken a running start and sailed over the trench, clearing the 14-foot wall and an electrical wire atop it that is supposed to give a mild shock. Some experts speculate that Jabari may have been doing a, quote, display run, a showy charge that younger males perform for females or other audiences. Others say he could have been motivated by fear, anger, or desire to breed. Dallas Zoo officials believe he escaped by leaping because they could not find evidence of human error, like an open door or any other object that could have helped him out. But the zoo director, Rich Bucherud, said, we still have not had anyone come forward yet to say they actually witnessed the event. So it goes on from there, but I mean, it's, I think, interesting on a few levels. I mean, one, maybe he just wanted to get out. But on a broader, perhaps more helpful note, I mean, the idea of zoo design and how to put together enclosures that keep both animal and zoo patrons safe, but are also stimulating and really right, or as right as any situation where an animal's in captivity can be, is definitely something we want to address on a forthcoming edition of Talking Animals. This recent conference I went to, there was a whole really fabulous panel on that, and the director of the Oakland Zoo, which by most accounts, this guy and that zoo, not coincidentally, it's been there about 20 years, do probably the best job or one of the best jobs in terms of enclosure design that meets all that criteria. So I'm going to see about getting him on and or others that were part of that panel, because it's a pretty interesting topic. You know, a lot of people would say, look, you know, yeah, it's bad they're in captivity, but how do we see them otherwise? How do our kids see them if we're not going to scoot off to Africa? Valid point. Still tough deal, the world of zoos. But if people are doing a really, really exceptionally good job and the animals are really stimulated and have space and other things that help kind of minimize some of the stress behaviors you see, then, well, that's probably the best version of it that it can be. So we're going to get into that, hopefully, one of the forthcoming editions of Talking Animals. Meanwhile, it's time for our instant quiz, our mid-news instant quiz. It's simply true-false. The first person who calls in with the correct answer at 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI, gets a prize. And again, we're not talking just any kind of prizes. We've got CDs, we've got books, we got among our CDs, one from Ian Anderson, from Jethro Tull, who was a guest many, many months ago now in Talking Animals, but it's got a good number of animal songs, and all the way ranging to something more recently that's called Liberation, which is songs to benefit PETA, which has a bunch of bands kind of contributing. The Used, Goldfinger, The Faint, Good Charlotte, Anti-Flag, Desperacitos, and on and on. So you can win that. You can win T-shirts from cool animal organizations. We've got jewelry. We've got cat collars. We've got dog leashes. We've got safety collars. We've got umbrellas. We've got, I mean, it's on and on. A bunch of cool stuff. And so if you're the first to call, and keep that in mind later, too, for when we get into Name That Animal Tune. So here's our question. Simply true, false. First person to call in has a choice of those prizes. 949-824-5824. Here's the question. A rat can go without water longer than a camel can. True or false? 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. We're going to have time maybe for one or two more stories, at least for now. And then I want to step into the comedy corner, and then, of course, we'll be joined by our guest, Dr. Mary Sebsta, answering all kinds of questions, mine and hopefully yours, about animals, pet care during the summer or just generally. So, but I found this interesting too. This was in Saturday's LA Times headline, LA cuts funds to wildlife experts. A mountain lion roams Griffith Park, hungry coyotes attack children and snatch cats from backyards. Bears gamble across lawns in nearby cities. So how can it be, some residents and city officials are asking, that the city of Los Angeles has decided to cut off funding for its two wildlife experts? On Friday, after hearing the sad tale of three beloved cats and one small dog devoured by coyotes in a single block in the Hollywood Hills, Councilman Tom Labonge called for reinstating the coyote program and its two experts. Quote, there's a lot of wildlife in Los Angeles. It's not all on Sunset Boulevard. Oh, Councilman Ucard. Labonge noted that the officers who are slated to be moved to new positions in the city's Animal Services Department on July cost the city $190,000. That's a small price to pay, he said, for residents to feel their children and pets are secure and their local parks safe for picnics. Officials of Animal Services said the wildlife officers were victims of tight budgets. The officers will not lose their jobs, but will take on other responsibilities unless the city council restores the funding. And there'll be a hearing coming up on that. So, anyway, that's a tricky one, especially given some of the stories that have been popping up lately. But anyway, that, I think, for now is going to have to do it for this edition of Animal News. Again, if we have time later, we'll come back to some other stories ahead of mine. And, of course, if there are ever any news stories or announcements or events that you'd like to bring to our attention, please feel free to email us those items at talkinganimals@AOL.com. What else? We'd love to encourage you to email us with any comments about the show, suggestions of future guests, ideas about animal songs, animal comedy bits, any other animal topic that's on your mind. That email again is talkinganimals@AOL.com. And I'm pleased to remind you, perhaps redundantly so, about the Talking Animals website. We hope you'll check out the site at www.talkinganimals.net. That's .net. And sign up for the emailing list so we can keep you posted on upcoming guests and other announcements. You'll also find archives and synopses of just about all the shows, sorted photographs and articles, all kinds of links, other audio pieces and more. So please stop by and take a look around the site. Again, it's talkinganimals.net. It's time now to step into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner, which is always, of course, involves an animal-oriented piece of comedy. This is Jeff Wayne with a piece called When Animals Attack on today's Comedy Corner here on KUCI.
Here's one for you. Have you been watching this thing on Fox TV, which is sort of turning into a series now? When Animals Attack Humans. When Animals Attack Humans, I think it should be retitled Dumb Humans. Let me tell you when I turn this show off. I'm watching the show. And a husband and wife are going out on a boat, and they're narrating what happened that day, and it shows the husband with the video. Well, it's a beautiful day when me and Becky went out on the boat. And I was videotaping her up there on the bow and everything, and she's seen some underwater life. And it shows these huge killer whales under there. They're killer whales. He's taking the video, and his wife's standing there, and she goes, "They were so beautiful and so peaceful. And I wanted to be part of their reality, so I thought I would swim with them." And the husband said, "Well, it was such a beautiful day, it seemed like a good idea." You know, and it shows her jump in, and he starts videotaping this. And they swim for a little while, and then they start attacking her, and the music plays, and that's when I turn off the television. First of all, if you're with me on a boat and there's huge things under there, we're leaving. I don't know exactly what they are, but they're big, we're out in the ocean, I don't want to deal with this, we're gone. What really offended me about this is her going in there to swim is they're not just whales. They're killer whales. That's
the bleeping tip-off right there.
These are killer whales! And she's surprised that they're attacking her? They started attacking me! She's lucky I wasn't her husband. I would have been throwing after dinner mints in there. There you go, goddammit. That's a videotape I would have replayed over and over. No, Joe, catch the look on her face. Let me rewind that for you. Okay. Look at that expression right there. There you go.
That was Jeff Wayne with a piece called "When Animals Attack Humans," taken from his CD entitled "The Jeff Comedy Jam." The Comedy Corner is, of course, one of the signature features of Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss, and you're indeed listening to Talking Animals on KUCI 88.9 FM, broadcasting from the University of California at Irvine. As many of you know, we also stream live on the internet at www.kuci.org. Some of you, in fact, no doubt, are listening that very way. And some of you, if you know what's good for you, perhaps arrived through our swell website, talkinganimals.net. But yeah, before we proceed, I'm obliged to remind you that the opinions and views expressed on Talking Animals are not necessarily those of KUCI, UC Irvine, or the University of California Board of Regents. Okay, while we get today's guest, Dr. Mary Sebsta, on the phone with us here, this is as good a time as any to hear an animal tune. So this is James Mathis with "Nightingale." I'm Talking Animals here on KUCI.
I'm as blue as the sea, blue as the bluest flowers that bloom. A sigh, a song, the sadness brings, as sad as the song the nightingale sings. It's one that I've learned since you've been gone, one I've learned to sing from now on. So far away, I'll sail from this shore. A sad song, the silence brings, as sad as the song that the nightingale sings. One that I learned since you've been gone. I learned to sing from now on. Mm-hmm.
This is music from James Mathis with an animal tune called Nightingale here on KUCI. And earlier in the show, I mentioned that this week's guest is Dr. Mary Sebsta, first-rate veterinarian who practices at the Newport Harbor Animal Hospital. And we've been fortunate enough to have her as a guest previously on Talk Animals, and there's much to talk about today. So without a lot of preamble or blather, let's just welcome Dr. Mary Sebsta to Talk Animals. Are you there, Dr. Sebsta?
Hi. Thanks, Duncan.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks so much for joining us. It's great to have you back on the show. And I think one place that we'd like to start, because you and I have talked about this before, and I think it's a really cool, important issue, is how should people play the issue of they call up, you know, they call you or they call the office and say, hey, you know, my dog or my cat has this situation. Can you just prescribe this, or how, you know, can I just get something done over the phone? And what are sort of the pluses and minuses of that approach, and whether a vet should do that even?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Okay.
One that we frequently run into, too, at this time of year. Actually, my mom reminded me about this issue not too long ago. She was pointing out to me that, you know, on one of these radio shows, I should mention how harmful it is for my clients to give their pets over-the-counter medications like aspirin at home, and how that can lead to certain little disasters or ill health in their pets at home. And I agreed with her at the time, and I said, you know, also that tends to include really any medication, not just things like aspirin or other forms of treatment, too. Lots of these things probably should be discussed with a veterinarian, and probably best in the context of a physical exam. So every once in a while, over, you know, summer months or any time throughout the year, I may get a call from a client who is traveling with their pet, or their pet is afraid of thunderstorms or firecrackers, like on a holiday weekend, and they want to know if it's okay to give a certain medication. And my restriction is both legal and an ethical one, in that it's really inappropriate for any doctor, regardless of whether they're a human doctor or a veterinarian, to prescribe something to a patient without having first examined that patient and really knowing a little bit more about the animal. But let's discuss the legal part.
Sure.
In the law, the California Practice Act limits veterinarians to you need to have what's called a valid veterinary client-patient relationship.
Wow, that sounds fancy.
Yeah, and basically what that states is that the veterinarian knows this client, they know the patient, they know the course of treatment that they're prescribing for that patient is deemed to have benefit. They've made the client aware of any potential side effects, and they've also agreed to be available or have some sort of plan of action, in that if an adverse event happens, that the client will have some place to take their pet afterwards and have it examined.
So it's really not only a sort of protective thing, it's sort of encouraging an ongoing relationship, really.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, there are lots of, for instances, where, you know, the example of a client has a painful dog at home. They explain that their dog is a little bit sore, slow to get up, and they would like to know if it's okay to give some aspirin or some Tylenol to their pet.
Mm.
And although it probably sounds like a good idea and may even be a good idea, the unfortunate thing is, unless that veterinarian is aware of all the potential, you know, avenues for harm, for instance, does that dog have a bleeding disorder?
Yeah.
Could they have, you know, liver or kidney failure? Is this a hit-by-car exam? And the reason it's, or a hit-by-car, and the reason it's painful is because it got into an accident,
right,
and it's in shock.
And someone maybe just in their own craziness wouldn't mention something so crucial.
Exactly. You know, there are a million things that clients may leave out
in
a conversation with you that you really need to know about. And one of my favorites is the animal pregnant, too? You know, there are a whole list of things that are unsafe to be given to a pregnant animal because of harm to the fetuses.
Sure, sure.
And unless I know about that in the course of an exam, you know, that that can really do some harm.
Wow. Yeah, those are all really, really good points. And, of course, it's some of it's common sense, but you could also see how someone just sort of in a pinch would say, hey, well, let's just call over to the vet's office. We'll get something. But now the way you explain it, yeah, it just seems like there's multiple reasons why that's just...
And that also extends, too, for chronic medications. I know that occasionally we'll get the frustrated client that, you know, my pet has been on this medication its entire lifetime. We've always refilled it. Why do I have to bring my animal in this year? You know, nothing's really changed. Well, that may be so, but there, you know, for certain drugs, there is important blood monitoring that needs to be done. For instance, in the case of thyroid medication or phenobarbital, we need to monitor the levels of those drugs at minimum on a yearly basis. And we also need to be sure that we don't see any upcoming problems in the physical exam as well, too.
Yeah. I want to let our listeners know this is Dr. Mary Sebsta, and she's been kind enough to join us today on Talking Animals and even kinder enough to agree to, within the parameters that she just explained, take questions. So if you want to call in and ask a question that she can answer about your pet and animal, it's 949-824-5824, 949-UCI. KUCI. And Dr. Sebsta, kind of just since, you know, we are talking in sort of the beginning part of summer, there's a few questions I had that are sort of summer-oriented. One is, you know, obviously this is a time where a lot of people travel. Can you talk a little bit about sort of traveling with cats and or dogs or even other pets, people, animals may, might have at home? And, you know, sort of what works, what doesn't, and even maybe, you know, if there's some important difference between car travel and obviously plane travel. Just, I mean, I just think those are tricky areas for a lot of us. And sometimes, you know, again, we're not smart enough to necessarily consult our vet and see what would be a good way, a better way to do it. So,
yeah, the first thing is always to be aware of requirements for travel, because, I mean, travel can mean anything from driving to grandma's house who lives in the next town to flying out of the country, sometimes flying to areas that have special requirements for transport of animals, like an island such as Hawaii or Japan.
Yeah.
It's always a good idea if you are planning a long-distance trip, like the one I mentioned, for instance, to Hawaii, to speak to a veterinarian early on. As I mentioned, when travel involves certain areas of the world, such as an island, there can be very important requirements to get your pet ready for travel. For instance, our hospital has a schedule of events that we give owners that are planning to take their animal to Hawaii. Normally, owners aren't planning to take an animal to Hawaii if they're just, you know, going for a short trip.
Mm-hmm.
It's more or less only when they're planning to move to that state. But we do have a schedule for what needs to be done ahead of time. For instance, what kind of microchip identification is required by that state, what sorts of vaccinations are required by the state, and what time they need to be done by.
Oh, wow. So it's like a checklist.
Before planning on that trip.
That's great. So it's really a checklist of things that you want to be sure to cover and cover with enough lead time so that you don't end up with a problem on your hands. Yeah.
The next big issue, I guess, is, you know, sort of the next step down is travel where it's going to involve a plane. So something a little bit more than a car trip. It's going to be a longer vacation and it's going to involve a plane. I recommend not only speaking to the veterinarian to ensure that there are no health problems that would make a trip on a plane dangerous for that pet, or a concern, especially a special concern, but I also recommend talking to the airline, because different airlines have different requirements. For instance, some airlines refuse to carry big dogs.
Mm.
Some airlines will only allow pets to travel in cargo and not in the passenger area. And some are okay with small animals, small dogs and cats being carried on as carry-on as well, too.
Yeah, you know, that's a really good point because, I mean, even from airline to airline where you'd think, let's say, just for the sake of discussion, Delta and American would have pretty much the same requirements. I happen to know from semi-personal experience that in traveling with a pretty small dog, a Yorkie, after traveling on one of those airlines in a perfectly, you know, seemed like reasonably sized kennel, that in doing another subsequent trip at the other airline, that other airline said, you know what, no, that kennel isn't approved by us.
Inappropriate for their airline.
And next thing you know, this woman had to buy a gigantic kennel because there wasn't even one, the next appropriate size up wasn't available. So the next thing you know, she had this monstrous kennel for this Yorkie. But it's like, hey, either do it that way or you don't get on the plane. You know?
Yeah. The size of the carrier is important. Where the animal is going to be carried on the plane is important. It, of course, is important to ask if the cargo hold is pressurized.
Yeah.
So that we know that the animals aren't going to be in any harm. Some airlines do require from a veterinarian a letter of acclimation, which states that if the animal is going to be in an area outside of its thermoneutral zone, meaning it's going to be subjected to temperatures that are above or below what the animal's normally comfortable with, how long can they stay at those temperature ranges without incurring any harm?
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah. Again, really good to make probably a list of questions, you know, or make your own sort of mm-hmm. checklist to make sure that all those things, because, yeah, just you said a few things that even if you're pretty organized, you wouldn't necessarily think all the way far, like, okay, how long could someone be, even if that cabin seems safe or that storage area seems safe. So
right. Traveling in a car is kind of like traveling with kids as well, too. You need to be aware of how long the animal can go with drinking some water or needing to be let outside to go use the facility, so
mm-hmm.
to speak.
Sure.
How many, you know, rest stops that's going to mean along in a car ride. Of course, always making sure that there's fresh water available for an animal, and also being aware of special considerations. For instance, if you're traveling with an elderly and arthritic pet, it may be difficult for them to stay down in one position for a long time. So they may need to readjust themselves not only in the car, but you may need to stop more frequently so that they can get out and stretch themselves.
Mm-hmm. Good, good. These are all good. In fact, one thing that you said just to, by way of answering that, I wanted to maybe get into a little bit more specifically just on a general basis is, can you talk a little bit more about sort of tagging and or, you know, microchipping and even,
oh,
you know,
sure.
You alluded to how like certain states may have a different requirement. How does that work? And how does the actual microchip process work when, let's say, our little furry friend wanders off and is found somewhere? How does that actually work with the microchip?
Yeah, it's actually a fantastic little device. Microchips are basically these teeny tiny, about like the size of a grain of rice, device that's implanted under the skin, usually in the area of about in between the shoulder blades of a cat or a dog. Both of my cats are microchipped. The first cat was microchipped when I lived in Canada, and we just used whatever microchipping service we had available at mm-hmm. that time. It was very important to me because I knew my cat was getting on a plane.
Sure, yeah.
And going to be going through customs and having to travel over to the United States. My worst fear was, if the cat gets loose, how am I ever going to get this cat back?
Right.
In a completely different state.
Sure.
And, you know, collars are wonderful because they're an immediate source of information, but sometimes collars can be broken or taken off or lost. And in that event, I wanted some way of being able to get my animal back. So hospitals, many hospitals, and also nearly all shelters have microchip readers, which are just a little device that a veterinarian or an assistant will wave over the back, the shoulder area of the cat or dog, and it reads the information from the microchip. On the microchip, it usually states what the manufacturer of the microchip is, and if possible, it reads their number as well, too.
Hmm.
Now, not all scanners can read every microchip number. However, just about all scanners register that there is a microchip present and will register what company the microchip comes from. So even if your microchip doesn't match what your microchip scanner is in a certain area, usually there is a way of finding out the information. The information is carried by the hospital that implants the microchip. So
okay.
That's one area where that your home address and your contact information is kept, which, by the way, is important. Always make sure that your veterinarian does have current contact information.
Right. So if you move or whatever,
yeah.
But yeah, that's
also many companies such as Avid. That's the company that we microchip with.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the company, for instance, that Hawaii requires.
Yeah.
They like to have the Avid microchip. And I think that's true of Europe, too, although don't quote me on that because that might not be true.
Okay, Dr. Simpson, looks like we might have a call. Would you like to take a call? Cool. Hi, you're on live on KUCI. It's Talking Animals with Dr. Sebsta.
Hi there. I'd just like to ask, do you think it's okay to clean a cat's ears with a Q-tip?
Oh, boy, that's a difficult question. Why are we cleaning the cat's ears?
Well, I just noticed there's like some kind of junk in there.
Okay. Just a little mound of debris, a lot of debris.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. It has an unusual color to it.
No, it's actually just kind of... No, it's not. It doesn't have an unusual color.
Okay. Cat's ears normally should appear quite clean, actually, and there shouldn't really be any debris on the outside or the inside of the canal.
Okay.
Sometimes when that's happening, there's actually an infection to the ear canal.
Oh, okay.
So I always have to advise owners it's probably a good idea to have it looked at and determine if there is an infection present. Now, some animals can have ongoing chronic skin issues where, for instance, a dog with allergies may require a pretty constant system of cleaning ears at home. And there are some ear cleaners that can be used safely. But, yeah, in this case, I would always rule out infection first.
Okay.
Make sure that there's nothing going on there. There's no ear mites. There's no bacteria or yeast growing in that ear. And if not, I'm sure your veterinarian can recommend a safe ear cleaner that you can use on a regular basis.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you for your call.
Bye.
Back to the microchip. I mean, that was a really cool question because, that's the other thing is, too, which is why it's so great when you can join us on Talking Animals, is that there's certain things where you think, well, geez, you know, I can sort of do this myself. Without going to the vet. But, I mean, I guess sometimes it's hard to know where that line is, and that's a really good point. You'd think, well, there's something we can kind of clean out there, but, geez, if it might reflect some kind of infection or something.
Well, I always like to draw on the example of sometimes, you know, particularly in dogs that are traveling in fun areas, you know, especially for the state of California, they can get foreign bodies in their ears like foxtails. And actually, by introducing cleaners or cotton balls or Q-tips into the ear of their animal, they can be making the condition worse.
Oh, wow.
Occasionally, every once in a while, too, in a dog, or actually even in cats, too, I'll run into a situation where there's a ruptured eardrum. And if I don't know that by looking down the pet's ear canal, actually putting certain types of ointments or ear cleaners in, you can actually cause a head tilt.
Oh, my God.
So,
All
the more important to look first.
Yeah, proceed with
make
caution.
Make sure we properly assess the situation, and then we can decide what to treat it with.
Jeez. All right, again, we're speaking with Dr. Mary Sebsta, and she's happy to take calls here at KUCI, 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. Dr. Sebsta, kind of staying with, at least generally, our summer theme. What particularly happens with our animal friends that live with us when it comes to summer and like either allergies or just, you know, is it tougher on the, you know, flea front? What should we step up our efforts? Or?
Oh, it's always tougher on the flea front.
Yeah.
Any dermatologist in the world would tell you that.
Yeah.
Fleas like a certain amount of things. They like humidity, they like heat, and they like vibration in the environment. Summertime is a nice, warm set of months, lots of activity. So usually all three of those conditions, the humidity, the heat, the vibration, and the environment are all met.
And what do you mean, before you go on, sorry, but what do you mean by vibration? That's really interesting. I mean, I didn't know that.
For instance, if there are eggs or pupae, which are portions of the flea life cycle, so either eggs that are going to hatch into larvae or the pupae or pre-emerged adults, if those are sitting in the environment, for instance, in your carpet, lots of activity like people, pets running through an area, or the vacuum cleaner can actually encourage hatching of eggs and also hatching out of these pre-emerged adults as well, too.
Wow, that's really interesting. I had no idea.
Yeah, so during, you know, for instance, the summer when there's lots of activity, nice warm summer months, the flea life cycle usually only takes about 3 weeks from an egg to be laid to being an adult emerged. So it's a very short interval for these fleas to start hatching out, and we start to see them in the thousands at that time of year. We see fleas in California in every month, every year, all year round. It's always possible for fleas to hatch out, especially inside the house, because it's always, you know, kind of a nice warm temperature for us. And for our pets. But in the summer, it's even just more so. So, you know, usually the summer months are a little bit worse than the winter as well, too.
Wow. Well, that's, I mean, it doesn't sound encouraging. No? It sounds like almost no matter what you would do, those fleas are going to do what they do. But,
well, no, there are actually some very, very good products out on the market that we use for control of fleas. Veterinarians have their own particular favorites. Again, it's something you should discuss with your veterinarian because there can be health issues for why one flea product is a better choice than another. In your pet, I do not recommend over-the-counter products that contain pyrethrins. We've kind of gotten away from that because we've noticed, particularly in cats, some cases of toxicity associated with that. So, yeah, I do recommend the flea products that your veterinarian would recommend.
Prescribe, yeah. Okay, Dr. Setzer, we're just sort of nearing the end of our time, but this is actually a question that came by email. It's not really seasonal or summer-related, but it's really interesting, I think. I guess this person has a friend who may be raising a dog for a guide dog problem. But regardless, the key question is this dog apparently is sort of what's being described as a compulsive barker.
Oh.
So I guess the question is why and how does that happen? More to the point, what can you do to sort of help reduce the barking, if not eliminate it to that degree?
The big crux of that problem is trying to get to the bottom of why is the barking happening? Under what circumstances is the compulsive barking happening? That's something that actually requires a pretty lengthy interview with the client as to determining all the factors where this compulsive barking is coming from.
I see.
With behavioral problems, we always encourage owners that the moment a behavior is noticed that's a little bit unusual, it warrants a discussion with your veterinarian. Behavioral problems are really best dealt with when they're new. Once the behavior goes on for a long time, months to years, it becomes harder to control and becomes harder to break in an animal as well, too. And that includes anything from barking to inappropriate elimination in the house, too. So the compulsive barking may, you know, it could have 100 different little reasons.
Right. So it sounds like that they need to be seen by someone, and the sooner the better to really
have that discussion of, you know, when is the barking happening, what's happening in the dog's environment when the barking is going on. And then from there, usually it's a matter of trying to train the dog or trying to give the dog a more appropriate behavior that's inconsistent with barking for the context that would make the dog bark in the first place. So, for instance, one of my old family pets, she had a habit of barking at guests that would come over to the house. It was kind of a fear-induced sort of thing. She would be afraid of strangers coming over to the house. They'd ring the doorbell. She'd know that there was going to be the stranger coming to the house. She'd bark, 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 bark. And of course, this is undesirable because you don't want your guests to have to face a 60-pound Dalmatian that's just barking at them the entire time. So whether we knew this was a good idea or not in the beginning, our decision on what to do was to train her that when the doorbell rang, she would go into a different room. We would actually lead her into the office downstairs and just let her sleep on her little dog bed downstairs with the toy. So it's very inconsistent behavior with what she was doing before. She's completely in a separate area from the guests. So she's not annoying the guests, and, you know, she can't see the guests either, so it seems to make her more relaxed afterwards. And over time, this worked very, very well. Every time she would hear the doorbell, she would want to go downstairs.
That's kind of an interesting sort of Pavlovian sort of wrinkle
there. Dogs are wonderful, in fact. They're very, very plastic, and, you know, they can be trained to do a whole wide range of behaviors. So.
Wow. Cool. Well, Dr. Sebsta, I'm afraid we're at the end of our time for this week, but gosh, I really, really appreciate you joining us again on Talking Animals, and really great, valuable information, and I'm sure our listeners appreciate it as well, and I appreciate our caller who called in with that specific question. So we hope to have you on again sometime, but
Great. Meanwhile,
thank you so much for joining us today on Talking Animals.
Thanks again.
Okay, bye-bye. Okay, I want to thank again Dr. Mary Sebsta for joining us today on Talking Animals. Again, she practices at Newport Harbor Animal Hospital. The phone number there is 949-631-1030. And their website is www.newportharborvets.com. I'm Duncan Strauss. You're listening to Talking Animals on KUCI and Irvine, 88.9 FM, streaming live on the internet at KUCI.org. It's time now to proceed to Name That Animal Tune. Again, this is pretty much like any version of Name That Tune you'd care to mention, except that in this game, the tunes are always animal-related. So I'll play a snippet of this tune, and there'll be a prize. That's right, a prize. I think I mentioned some of the prizes earlier. For the first caller who correctly identifies the song that we're going to play momentarily, the animal tune in question. So as soon as you recognize this animal tune, please call us at 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. All right, let's get started. It's Name That Animal Tune on Talking Animals here on KUCI.
I remember when Mary Lou said, "You want to walk me home from school?" Well, I said, "Yes, I do." Said, "I don't have to go right home, and I would kind of like to be alone some of you would." I said, "Me too." And so we took a stroll, wound up down by the swimming hole, and she said, "Do what you want to do."
Can you name this animal tune?
I got silly and found
the... How about shortly? How about when they get to the chorus? You think that?
And I said, "This frog's for you." She said, "I don't like spiders and snakes."
How about now?
"What it takes to love me."
All right, well, we're starting to verge into Who's Buried in Grant's Tomb territory. So anyway, if you do know it, call 949-824-5824, 949-UCI, KUCI, and we'll get you set up with one of those cool prizes. Meanwhile, I'm Duncan Strauss, and we've just about reached the end of this week's edition of Talking Animals. I want to remind you that the views and opinions expressed in the show are not necessarily those of KUCI, UCI, or the University of California Board of Regents. I want to thank again our guest, Dr. Mary Sebsta, for joining us today on Talking Animals. And I also want to thank you all for listening and for our phone caller. I hope you'll join us next week on Talking Animals, when our guest will be Janelle Robinson, a therapist at the Shea Therapeutic Writing Center in San Juan Capistrano, which helps people with various ailments. By way of programs that involve riding horses. So I think it's going to be really, really interesting. And we hope you'll join us for that on Talking Animals next week, Monday, June 28th. Of course, we also hope to reschedule a visit by vegan chef extraordinaire Tanya Petrovna as soon as possible. By the way, other great public affairs shows on KUCI include Just Today Alone, the Serena Sharp Show, which of course precedes Talking Animals. Then at 5 p.m. we offer Counterspin, followed at 5:30 by Planetary Radio with Matt Kaplan. And that's just Monday, folks. There's great public affairs programming and talk shows like this virtually each weekday, 8 to 9 and 9 to 10 in the morning, then again from 5 to 6 in the afternoon. On the music side of the KUCI schedule, I also host a show called The Dead Air Zone, Thursdays from 8 to 10 p.m. So when you have a chance, please check it out. And again, I want to urge you to check out our website, talkinganimals.net. When you get there, please sign up for our email list so we can alert you to guest bookings and other events and announcements. Also, I encourage you to email me with any comments, guest suggestions, ideas about show topics, animal songs, animal comedy bits, news stories, and anything else you'd like to pass along at talkinganimals@AOL.com. I really look forward to hearing from you. Please stay tuned for Jeff Scott and the Blues Disease, this great, great blues show here on KUCI coming up momentarily. This has been Talking Animals. on 88.9 FM KUCI in Irvine. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. And as always, we're going to close things out here with an animal-related tune. This is a song from the brand-new PJ Harvey album, It's called Cat on the Wall. We'll catch you next week on Talking Animals.